This is Karen Lyle of SalesportTalk.com on Sports Byline, broadcasting on the American Forces Network to 177 countries and 100 million people on iHeart, TuneIn, Stitcher, and XM Sirius Radio, as well as 200 satellite radio stations throughout the United States. Today, we are talking with Tom Slingsby, Olympic gold medalist and skipper CEO of Team Australia of SailGP. Tom, you said that Nathan really had the advantage. Can you explain a little bit more?
Yeah, we at Team Australia have identified that we think that Team Japan and Nathan Outridge, skippering that team, are getting the best results in light air. And it's pretty easy to see when you get light air events like Taranto in Italy. Nathan won that. And in season one, Nathan was very strong in the light airs. We've identified that they're sailing the boat better. Nathan is unbelievable at finding extra wind. He's better at sniffing out a bit more wind on the racetrack. And B, they also set the boat up quite a bit differently to other teams. From what we can see, it's got a few pros and cons. And at times, he can set the boat up to be a little quicker than other people in the same amount of wind. And then sometimes, in our opinion, it might hinder that team. And we're always trying to learn, and light airs hasn't been a strength of ours in the past. And so what we usually do then is we identify who we think the best guy is, the best team, and we start copying and learning and trying to figure out why his techniques are working. And then we learn that technique, and then we try to evolve it into our game. And Nathan Outridge I think it's pretty fair to say he's probably the best light air sailor I've seen. And he keeps showing it time and time again in SailGP.
Well, and you see him also commentating on America's Cup.
So
everybody takes a different role. So what's argy bargy? So you made some comment about argy bargy and being ahead of the argy bargy. Give us the breakdown on that.
I think argy bargy might be a bit of an Aussie saying, but it essentially means other boats fighting. So I'm not too sure exactly what I was quoted saying, but I was probably talking about the racing in Denmark. There was a bit of argy-bargy behind us, which is basically, a couple of boats fighting and boats getting involved in a little match race when there's a fleet race going on. And we try to avoid those situations and steer clear and just get out in front and try to win the race from the front.
All right, thank you for that, and welcome back to the show. Rick Tuttle with you, coast to coast and around the world on the American Forces Radio Network. It is Tuesday at 9:40. That's when we check in with our friends at SailSportsTalk.com. And as always, co-hosting the segment with me is Karen Lyle, and we have a special guest. If you're looking on the Twitch.tv cameras right now, you can see him. It's our friend Paul Kayard. We'll get to him in just a second. But Karen, hello. How you doing, kid?
I'm doing great. So wish I could be there right in person. But, I don't think we've had three people in the studio since the pandemic started,
Oh, it would be a Delta super spreader for sure, huh?
But anyway, what a pleasure to have Paul Kayard back and now the head of the U.S. Sailing Olympic team. I'm just thrilled.
Yeah, Paul is with us. Paul, welcome back to the studio. Really appreciate you coming in.
Thanks, Rick. And hi, Karen. How you doing?
Good to talk to you, Paul.
Okay, as Karen mentioned, Paul is the executive director of U.S. Olympic Sailing. He just came back from Tokyo for the Olympics. And, Paul, we were chatting a little bit before the show. The Olympic Sailing Committee, they were looking for what you called a turnaround. What did you mean by that?
Well, over the last 40 years, the U.S. Olympic Sailing Team has gone from being the dominant force in Olympic sailing. In Los Angeles in 84, we won nothing but gold and silver in all the classes. That's a performance that'll never be repeated again. But and we've kind of gone down to the middle of the pack. We got a lot of ninths and tenths and twelfths this year in Tokyo, which isn't horrible by any measure, but it's not what Americans think of themselves.
That's downright un-American.
It's un-American. Mediocrity is un-American. And so,
Paul.
Yeah. Go
well,
ahead, Karen.
We've interviewed quite a few of the Olympic team members and great people, just really working their very hardest. What do you think the support is that's needed to really help the American team get out there on top?
Well, we just need more support, Karen. And they are great people. They're incredible human beings. They're very dedicated athletes. They pour their heart and soul for, you know, 4 or 8 or sometimes 12 years into this. They are certainly not getting rich doing it. It's all about the passion. It's all about patriotism and doing it for the USA. We just need to raise a level of support here in the United States. I guess your viewers know that the United States of America is one of the few countries that does not provide any type of governmental support for any of its Olympic teams. So whether you're in track and field, swimming, basketball, sailing, archery, whatever it is, you have to raise your own funds to support the athletes. So, you know, by comparison, just for the viewers' education, UK sport is given £500 million a year from their lotto system. So that's the kind of support that we're going up against in all sports, not just sailing. So what we're focused on right now is really appealing to our supporters. You know, the Olympic sailing could be viewed as the pointy end of a spear on the back of which all of U.S. sailing rides. I heard you just a minute ago talking to Tom Slingsby. I'm not sure when that's going to feature or if that was live, but, you know, he was part of Oracle Racing with Jimmy Spithill. They're both Australians. Well, why are we having Australians skippering our America's Cup boats? You know, it's because we don't have the talent. Slingsby is a gold medalist from London. Slingsby just won the Moth World Championship in Les Gardes with nothing but first places. And we, you know, we can be that good and we need to be, but we need to support our athletes to the extent that they need to be competitive. So, and there's another, so part of it is, I like to say this too, if I'm going to increase the funding 50%, I'm actually going to increase the output 70%, because we need to not only have more money, but we need to work smarter. We need to be more efficient. And that's a system we're bringing into play here for the U.S. Olympic sailing team.
For people who don't know, Paul Caillard himself, one of the most accomplished sailors in United States history, not just an Olympian a couple times, but America's Cup, Rolex Yachtsman of the Year. And I know because of your multilingual, you've done commentary in other countries as well. United States Sailing Hall of Fame, but coming up here on October 4th, you're going to go to Bashoff, the Bay Area Sports Hall of Fame, and because you are a local guy, San Francisco State, what's that honor like for you?
Well, Rick, it's bigger, you know, it's bigger than myself, really. You know, that's, of course, you know, U.S. Sailing Hall of Fame, that makes sense, but to be in something like Bashoff where it's across all the sports, it's really a recognition of the sport of sailing. You know, being included with the baseball players, the football players, Natalie Coughlin, who's a very decorated swimmer, Johnny Mosley, this Olympic skier, is going to introduce me. We're kind of lifelong friends. So, you know, this is a really great milestone for the sport of sailing to be included in Bashoff, and I'm just honored to be the person representing sailing.
Very cool.
Are you going to be competing in the big boat series race this coming up?
I'm not, but I'm around. I'll be attending a Rolex dinner on Thursday night, and I just have a few things going on, a little bit on my personal, my mother, my parents are a little old, and we all know how that goes, so I'm spending a little time with them, and very, very frankly, just busy. I have an all-athlete call on Friday in the middle of the day with the U.S. Olympic sailing team to tell them what the plan is for 2022. So this is more than a 7-day-a-week job.
So, Paul, where do we go for the next step? Because, you know, nowadays when we hear sailing, we think about, you know, the scandal at Stanford where the poor guy picks up a phone and loses his job. I felt sorry for that guy, the way he was kind of manipulated there. But I think a lot of people still see it as an elitist sport and like, well, I could never get into it. How would I ever get in? But yet from doing this show over the years, we see that there are a lot more diverse opportunities for people to get in. But where do we go where we don't have to have a Kiwi or an Aussie skipper our America's Cup boat?
Well, that's a great question, and that is one of the focuses. We call it the domestic platform. So we need to start with grassroots, high school sailing, community sailing, goes into collegiate sailing. Believe it or not, collegiate sailing is an NC2A sport. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just we need to bring the power of a population of 330 million to bear on the sport of sailing. It is too narrow. It is too elitist. And, you know, some of the changes that are being made, kiteboarding, for example, is going to be in the Olympics. And, you know, there's a lot of kiteboarders. They just jump on something off Chrissy Field. They don't really even know how to sail a boat, really. Daniel Moroz, who's a four-time world champion, went sailing on a boat kind of for the first time about a year ago. So I think there's more accessible ways to get involved. I do want to give a shout out to Tom and Stacy Siebel, who are big yachting people, but they've put their money into something called the Siebel Sailors Program for U.S. Sailing. It's a broad-based community sailing program through 10 regions in the United States. Has nothing to do with the Olympics, has nothing to do with the top end of the sport, has everything to do about access and community sailing. And we have an awareness. We are that kind of elitist, white male sport. That's just where we come from.
Right.
But we have an awareness to that. We acknowledge it, and we're working hard to open ourselves up and cast the net wider and give access to more people. So I'm proud of the direction we're going. You know, are we going to turn this ship around in a, you know, in a 10-foot radius? No. It's a big, heavy ship, and we're turning it. But at least we've started the turn.
Well, Paul, we've interviewed Chris Childers several times and also Betsy Allison, and inclusive sailing and adaptive sailing and also just outreach in the community is really a goal of U.S. Sailing right now. And you also have that program for the basic keelboat, you know, for certified schools accrediting people who are interested in cruising as well. Now, does your role extend to any of those categories, or is it just strictly the Olympics?
Well, my role, not the cruising and the things like that, but I am in charge of Paralympic sailing as an Olympic event. And unfortunately, sailing was removed from the Paralympics for 2020 and 2024 in France. We are lobbying very hard to get it back into the LA Olympics in 2028. I'm on a board called America One, where we support BADS, which is Bay Area Disabled Sailors. And we also support Team Paradise in Florida, which gives a lot of opportunities for veterans, disabled veterans who want to learn to sail. So I'm proud of my association with those two activities. And as I said, we are lobbying hard to get Paralympic sailing back into the Olympics for 2028.
So as we were mentioned, Paul just came back from Tokyo, and of course it was an Olympics like no other. It was delayed a year, and even when it happened, there were still a lot of people who didn't want it to happen, and there were the privations of separation and rules and vaxes and max and no fans. How did it go for you guys? What was it like? How did it feel, the whole thing, to you?
It was a strange feeling, Rick. I have been to a couple other Olympics, which the beauty of the Olympics is the mixing. It is the community. You're mixing with Lisa Leslie in basketball, or Michael Jordan in my first games in 84, you know, the track and field. But anyway, there was no mixing at all because of COVID. And very few of our athletes went to the opening. There was an opening ceremony. Very few went. Nobody went to the closing. It was odd. You just were either in your hotel room, or you were in the van going to the venue, or you were in the venue. The venue itself seemed pretty normal because all the other teams were in the venue and, you know, the races were being conducted. So I guess the upshot of it is that they pulled it off, which is big because athletes train an entire lifetime for that opportunity, and they got that opportunity. The bells and whistles were trimmed off, and it's a little bit of shame, but it is what it is.
All right, and we just have about 30 seconds, so I'll just ask, how are we looking for the next Olympics? Are we going to get that turnaround, or are we still going to be 9th and 10th in these things?
I think we're going to move up the pecking order. As I said, we have some athletes that are definitely medal contenders for 2024. You know, my dream would be to kind of get 3 medals for 2024 and then be competing with Great Britain and England, or Germany for they got five medals out of 10. So if you can, nowadays, if you can medal in half the classes, you're a top team. So that's 2028.
It's Paul Kayard, United States Sailing Hall of Famer, and soon to be Bay Area Sports Hall of Famer as well, coming up here on the 4th. Thanks for coming in again, buddy.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Karen, thanks for your time.
Thanks so much, Paul.
Thank you.
All right, good stuff. We'll take a quick break and come on back on Sports Byline.